Mr. Martin, what I'm going to talk about is a little bit about what governments are for, but mostly about where does policy come from? Why do we get the policies we've got? And what are the drivers that are shaping that today? And what does that mean for us as public health professionals in terms of what we can do? If you look at the UK government's definition of policy, this is it. It's essentially about capturing the dreams and the aspirations of politicians and trying to turn them into practical programmes and actions that deliver what they want to deliver in the real world. And all that blue sky thinking becomes absolutely more difficult once you think about how you're going to do that across a broader group of nations such as Europe. But policy, of course, comes from a number of different things. It starts with how we think about the problem, what we think it's caused by. It really is dictated by what we think works, the social climate of what people are prepared to accept, what's popular, what is out there is absolutely critical. And it's also, of course, about power and about competing influence, lobby groups, all the things you'll be familiar with. So essentially, what emerges as policy is about a balance. It's about, of course, what's scientifically plausible. It's about what's politically acceptable. But it's also what's at the heart of it, very practical, and what we can implement and what we can make change. So exactly how does policy emerge? Well, if we look back at history, as Martin was reminding us, quite often it occurs out of revolutions, either of thinking or quite literally in practice. But quite often it also occurs as part of an evolutionary process. And I know that that can often be controversial for you, but what I mean by that is that it can be about incremental change, that often policies emerge and things change before we even realise that it's happening. So how does that apply to the world that we inhabit today? Well, I think increasingly culture is playing a massive role. Culture in the form of films, in the form of television, whether it's An Inconvenient Truth, Supersize Me, or for us, and I know that you share that with us, Jamie's School Dinners, have an amazing impact on policy and how governments think and how people themselves think. And once we get to the stage where people, as they did in these films, are beginning to tell their own story, then we begin to have a different push for policy altogether. And I think linked to that is one of the major driving forces of our time, which is the changing face of communications. It's absolutely amazing if you look at what the most recognisable brands in the world are, their mobile phones. If you think about the potential that anybody, anywhere, with a mobile phone can connect to people all around the world. And in the past, of course, media and communications have been controlled by governments. They've been controlled by media barons, but that's just not true anymore. It's now down to people taking individual action. But more importantly, the way in which we communicate and the way in which we use the internet also tells us something about how we can work with people to change things and make them change the way they live their lives. And a good example of that would be Amazon. I'm sure a number of you have bought books from Amazon, and I'm sure a number of you have been amazed when they then send you back a little profile of what you might want to buy next. They know that connecting to people is actually about understanding them as individuals and how they live their lives. And here in the States, CNN, I think, has revolutionized news. I report the fact that people can capture the news where they are, their lives, communicate and educate each other and shape the world in a different way is revolutionizing the way that we think about news and the way in which, in fact, that happens. So as we move forward, we actually will find that media becomes more important. As we look at figures, from example, the US Census Bureau, it shows in fact that the average American citizen spends increasingly more year on year on media. And if you look at the number of people in 1995 in your population who accessed the media through the internet, it was about 1 in 50 people. Now it's 1 in 3. And increasingly people are taking that media, they're remixing it, they're using it for their own purposes. So once people start to share their lives, their news, and the way they see their world, we really need to think differently in public health. And of course, it's a fantastic opportunity, because just think, if we could capture that enthusiasm, if we could capture that energy, then we could maybe change the world in different ways. In England, we generated quite a good national debate when the 10 o'clock news picked up on some local profiles which essentially showed in maps and in figures what it was like to live in different towns around England. And the BBC had it as their main news item. It showed that the north of England was poorer than the south, that people's health was affected, and that certain towns in England were the fattest. And we had a really good media debate. But what absolutely amazed me was within 2 hours of that being broadcast at 10 o'clock at night, 750,000 people had downloaded the information from our website in the health ministry, which was far more than we could ever have expected. So people are really interested in their health, and they use the media as a way of accessing it. So who really does drive policy these days? I think increasingly the debate also is being driven by people. We have an organisation, another internet organisation called NetMums, which is made up of a group of mothers who are pretty representative across society. And they held a very good debate on what they wanted to see on food labelling. They wanted it to be clearer, they actually approved of the government ways of doing it. But it was certainly true that they gave us much more support than perhaps we imagined. And you have to question as we go forward how we manage to keep ahead in policy terms of where people are and how we can support them to achieve their aims, and what role will politicians face in the future if we're truly going to democratise health in public health terms. I think also because we live in a market economy, whether we like it in public health or not, we need to think about how we can use market forces and turn them around for health. And here are some examples of things we've been trying to do in the UK. We've looked, for example, at labelling to try to improve people's understanding so that they can buy things that are healthier, and that's beginning to have an impact. But it's actually captured the imagination of some of the investment analysts, the people in our banking world, who look at where companies should place their money. And JP Morgan did a big global report looking at which companies were sustainable based on what kind of foods they produced. And what we're finding increasingly amongst our young people, and it's true across Europe as well, is that people want to look for values for money from companies and not just value for money in terms of how much their goods cost. Young people in Britain and in Europe are looking at companies to see whether they want to work for them according to the values they have. And that's a very powerful force for us in public health. I mentioned at the beginning that how you frame the problem really dictates the answer that you get. And a really good example of that is a report that the UK government's chief scientific advisor, David King, has recently produced. He looked at the evidence base from obesity, from everything as we asked him to do, from anthropology through to urban planning, and came up with a very different solution, a very different way of framing the answers from the way perhaps we traditionally look at it. He recognised, as Martin was cautioning us, that we can't act as individuals on obesity alone, that we have to have a whole societal approach, and that we need to be creative in the solutions we find, and we need to work with new partners, business, industry, science. We need to work across the whole of society. So how you frame the problem is absolutely critical to what solutions you find. And across Europe, what we're beginning to find is, in fact, we have a common purpose, that over the last decades we have actually come up with a common understanding of the health problems that we face, and that we're increasingly beginning to take collective action on key issues. If you look at this map, it shows to some extent which countries are at least trying to tackle the issue of smoking in public places. And increasingly there is a cultural shift across Europe where if countries like Italy can put this into place, or indeed now England, then why can't other countries too? And we're beginning to look at new areas, action on food labelling, to see about how we can set common standards, how we can work collectively across countries. And of course, once you start looking at individual governments and how you work across them, there are key issues. How does the EU add value? How can a common set of standards help member states? How can we work together on action, and how do we take people with us, and how, when it's really necessary, can we use legislation that's going to move the agenda forward? One of the things I think that's increasingly becoming recognised in Europe and in our own country in England as well is the power of the workplace. And I know in America that you have much action on this, but we're increasingly finding that the business community is putting the business case for improving health at work, because they know that every £1 invested in health actually returns £3 in terms of increased productivity, a better bottom line, better customer service. It really makes a difference. So we've been working with some of our major NGOs, the Heart Charities and others, to look at practical action we can take, and it's a theme that's also come out of the new European Health Strategy. But a key driver for us across Europe are our societies themselves and how they're changing. They're becoming much more diverse, they're moving around Europe, so much so that when the newly elected French president first started his campaign, the second place he came to was London, because London has more voting French people than Nice, one of the cities on the south coast. So there is increasingly a pressure for Europe to become more diverse, but also not only are politics changing, but the people that we're serving, migration and movement of professionals as well, are facing us with challenges that we wouldn't have thought when the European Union was established that we would actually have to deal with. So I think that there is a general trend in health policy to realise that there has to be a rebalancing around what governments do. They have to understand people's lives and what changes them. They have to think about how they can give power back to people to take control over their own health. But they absolutely have to have a role in shaping the societies in which people live. But they need to do that in a way where they're thinking through how their policies can reach people at work, at home and at school with positive messages of support, but also with the critical health protection that, for example, smoke-free public policies provide. So it's absolutely at a time where I think a lot of the drivers are around what is the right mix between the individual and the state. And I think that's universally taking place across Europe, where there's a debate about what the best balance should be for each member state and for Europe as a whole. So people have always communicated, but I think the case I'm trying to make is the way in which we communicate, the speed at which we communicate and how we communicate is changing. And as people begin to shape policies more and more, we need to think about how we respond to governments, how we work with them and how we manage to keep that step ahead of actually meeting their expectations, but listening crucially to what they think and what they say. In Europe, very recently, in the last couple of weeks, a new health strategy has been published. And I think the very key thing that it brings together is how much we share in Europe and our common purpose in terms of action. It stresses the shared values that we have and how the approach we take must be value-driven. Health is a fundamental right, engaging with citizens, equity, solidarity. It also puts at the centre how health is central to the growth of the economy, as Martin was reminding us, but we need to think through how those values play out. We also need to think, because so many of the health problems we face aren't about health policy, they're about broader social policy, how health can be a component of in all policies, and how we can encourage partnerships across all levels and with new players. And very importantly, it also recognises that Europe has a key role to play on the global stage, but increasingly the challenges we face aren't those that are generated within Europe, but are generated across the globe. So of course, much of the thinking about putting people at the centre of public health and the role they can play isn't new, as you will know very well from your own origins. But I think what's very crucial is that each century brings its own challenges. And we have a number of drivers for policy which we need to think about and we need to seize and grasp and embrace if we're going to be successful in public health, in continuing to take people with us and serving them effectively. So finally, I would leave you with a thought before we all feel too disempowered from Margaret Mead. One of the things that she said was that never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. And so I think for us in public health, if we want to start one of those revolutions, if we want to shift thinking, if we want to serve people in different ways, we need to grasp some of those new policy drivers, some of those new challenges, and continue to work with people for common purpose. Thank you very much.